Well, thank you very much, and thank you very much for the opportunity to present my work here. So I will be mainly talking about this n equals 1 mirror symmetry. It's a program which I was interested in the last couple of years, and I've listed here my collaborators, which I've worked on this topic on and off on various papers. But today I will mainly talk about the last paper, which appeared last fall. And my collaborators are Murat Alim, Michael Hecht, who are both but Murat is now a postdoc at Harvard. Michael Hecht and Adrian Mertens are PhD students in Munich. And it's with Peter Meyer, Masoud Zarosh, who is now also a postdoc at Munich, and Johannes Walcher. So the motivation for looking at mirror symmetry for me is that mirror symmetry is one of the rare instances in string theory or in string compactification where we actually can make quantitative predictions of certain non-perturbative quantum corrections. And this is possible because it relates classical moduli spaces on one side of the duality to certain quantum moduli spaces, as I will explain, on the other side of the duality. And it allows us ultimately to compute certain partition functions. And these partition functions, they then encode these non-perturbative quantum corrections. So in the closed string sector, that's a story which is, which emerged already quite some time ago. These are these Kummer-Witten invariants. And in the open string sector, that's what I will be mainly talking about. These are the Oguri-Wafa invariants. So I will be discussing Calabi-Yau manifolds and mirror symmetry of Calabi-Yau manifolds together with brains. And it's this scenario which will eventually also lead us to these open invariants, to these Oguri-Wafa invariants. So if you're interested in string compactifications from the low energy effective point of view, what these computations do for us is that they compute in the presence of certain D-brains, O-planes, or in the hadronic context in the presence of certain bundles, or in a more unifying scheme in some F-theory scenarios, they can compute for us certain effective couplings. And using then mirror symmetry together with maybe all the other dualities, you can compute certain couplings of the low energy effective action together with certain quantum corrections. So this is definitely an interesting topic, but I will not that much talk about this today and will mainly focus to try to explain to you what are the basics to actually get to these invariants and to a particular kind of superpotentials, which then, by using further dualities, actually encode some effective couplings also down here. So the outline of my talk is the following. I will introduce the concept of n equals 1 mirror symmetry. So quite some time ago, I've already given a talk on the subject. And I hope I'm not too repetitive, but I think it helps to remind us of some very basic concepts. Then I will talk about these n equals 1 effective superpotentials, which we are interested in computing. And then I will come to my main topic, which I will illustrate with an example. I will, in this talk, focus on so-called on-shell n equals 1 mirror symmetry quantities, namely domain wall tensions, which also have been appeared in the literature from a different angle, from a different point of view. And then I will conclude. So before we enter the arena of this n equals 1 mirror symmetry, let me briefly remind you of some aspects of n equals 2 mirror symmetry of type 2 string compactifications. So basically what it means, if we have a type 2 string theory compactified on some Calabi-Yau manifold ZB, which at low energies gives us an n equals 2 supergravity theory, then the statement is that there is a dual compactification of type 2A on a dual Calabi-Yau manifold ZA, which is chosen to be the so-called mirror manifold of the Calabi-Yau ZB. And now the statement is that if we choose these particular pair of Calabi-Yaus, namely the Calabi-Yau together with its mirror, that these two theories are dual to each other. So if we discuss these compactifications of type 2 on Calabi-Yau manifolds, in general, we know at low energies, the n equals 2 supergravity theory is governed by two kinds of multiplets. It's the vector multiplets and it's the hypermultiplets. So here we will focus solely on the vector multiplets. The reason being is that the moduli space of these vector multiplets are special Kähler manifolds, so they are complex manifolds, And we can use techniques of algebraic geometry to actually study these moduli spaces. And there's also a physics way of understanding why these vector multiplets in some sense are easier to discuss. Namely, we can discuss certain twists of these physical type 2 string theories to so-called topological string theories. And here the corresponding topological theory would be the topological B model, and here the topological A model. And these topological twisted theories, they just capture this subsector of vector multiplets. And this is, in some sense, a nice framework to actually discuss just the moduli space of these vector multiplets. So for type 2B theories, this particular moduli space turns out to be the complex structure moduli space of this Calabi-Yau manifold CB. So we have a true moduli space of all possible complex structure on this manifold CB. So in the CFT, we find the corresponding marginal operators, which correspond then to marginal deformations. And in this case, these deformations are actually unobstructed, so we have a true moduli space. And geometrically, the complex structure of these Calabi-Yau CB can be characterized by the data which we have in the Calabi-Yau, which is the unique, well, up to rescaling, the unique holomorphic 3 form which we have in the Calabi-Yau. So the holomorphic 3 form, it's a 3 form which has 3 holomorphic differentials. And by specifying, in some sense, by specifying the cohomology representative in the 3 form cohomology which we have on the Calabi-Yau, we can specify the complex structure of these spaces. Now, the mirror side, and these moduli spaces, as I mentioned, this is a special Kähler manifold. Now, on the mirror side, we have also marginal deformations, which are the mirror marginal deformations. So these marginal deformations, but they are not complex structure deformations; they are Kähler deformations. So what are the Kähler moduli of such Calabi-Yau manifolds? The Kähler moduli are certain. Are a linear combination of certain two-form cohomologies, or positive two-forms in some sense. And the structure of this moduli space, at least classically, it's just the cone over these two forms. And now you might wonder, why can these two theories be dual if we have here, in some sense, a more complicated geometry, and here we have just a cone over over certain two-forms. And the reason being is that this description here is a valid classical description which does not receive any world sheet quantum corrections, whereas this description here becomes only dual if you also include the world sheet quantum corrections which are present on the other side. And it's in this sense which makes mirror symmetry so interesting and also powerful, that we can, on the one hand side, we can study a classical deformation problem or a classical moduli space problem, and on the other side, we get some moduli spaces which only after taking into account quantum corrections become equal. So by knowing the dictionary between from going back and forth, we can actually explicitly extract these quantum corrections. And these in the closed string case are these Kromov-Witten invariants. And I should also stress, since we have here true moduli spaces, so at each point in the moduli space, we also have a CFT, a world sheet CFT description. And this will be somewhat different in the open string case. So what is now the new ingredient if we study now this n equals 1 mirror symmetry? So again, we have the analog of the previously discussed duality. Now, in this case, we have type 2b together with frames. So it breaks supersymmetry further down to n equals 1. And the geometry which we are discussing here is a very simple geometry. Namely, in addition to this Calabi-Yau threefold, we also include this a divisor. And as we will see, and as we go along, that this divisor encodes for us the Prain information we're interested in. Now, on the mirror side, we again have the mirror Calabi-Yau, which is the corresponding Calabi-Yau for this duality to work. But now we also need to worry about the Prain information. So this divisor D here now is mapped under the mirror conjecture to some special Lagrangian submanifold L. And now the geometry of this Calabi-Yau together with this divisor is now mapped to the mirror geometry together with this special Lagrangian manifold. So type 2B string theory together with sprains is, in some sense, F theory on a corresponding Calabi-Yau fourfold. And that's, well, I don't really have time to go into that, but there's also a way of identifying with this data a particular Calabi-Yau fourfold. And if you carry out this mirror symmetry concept a little further, then in some sense this fourfold should also be related to some lift of the brain geometry here and geometrizing it in some manifold, and the corresponding object should be a G2 manifold. Also, I don't really have to say much about this. So the low energy effective theory of this scenario is going to be now an n equals 1 supergravity theory, which is now specified by the Kähler potential of certain Kähler multiplets, the gauge kinetic coupling function, which is a holomorphic quantity, and the superpotential. And it's a superpotential which we are mainly interested in. So before I said that the geometric data were these holomorphic three forms. So now in order to include these devices, what we're considering here now are not holomorphic three forms, but so-called relative three forms. And I will explain what this means a little bit. And then in the duality, this is now again mapped just to the Kähler cone for the bulk geometry, together with the deformations of these special Lagrangian brains, which are now some certain complexified Wilson lines which we have on these special Lagrangians. And it's again this combination which in some sense forms a cone, which is mapped to this more complicated geometry of these relative three forms. And again, under including quantum corrections, this duality makes these two spaces the same. Now in this case, as I pointed out, this is not really a duality between moduli spaces, but it's a duality, well, at least in general, between deformation spaces. So in other words, in general, if you have such a combined system, as well I explained, there appear certain obstructions in deforming them. So what we are really discussing on this side is a classical deformation theory. And on the other side, we know that at least for certain special Lagrangian manifolds, they may be classical unobstructed, so we can classically deform them. But they receive quantum corrections, and after including these quantum corrections, they are also obstructed. So in this sense, here we are mapping classical deformation theory to quantum deformation theory. So the difficulty is now, as I pointed out previously, in these n equals 2 contexts, we had at every point in the moduli space, we had for the world sheet a CFT description. Here in this setup, this is not generally true anymore. Only if we go to supersymmetric configurations where the superpotential is extremized, we expect to have a world sheet CFT description. And that makes the calculations conceptually more difficult, but also technically sometimes more challenging. So how do we now actually approach this? So for the scenarios we are discussing, so this is now a cartoon of our Calabi-Yau geometry. And in this Calabi-Yau geometry, we are discussing the deformation of these devices. So these devices are complex one co-dimension objects in this geometry. So they are real four-dimensional objects. And we discuss a family of devices within these Calabi-Yaus. So for the kind of devices we are considering here, the deformation problem a priori is still unobstructed. So it's these complex structure deformations together with this family devices, which at first don't yield an obstruction. But also in this case, we have a vanishing superpotential. And I will explain later on how we actually get to a non-trivial superpotential and what quantities we are actually computing. But let me first focus a little bit more on this unobstructed system, because it contains already quite some information. So let me go here a little bit more into detail and give you an intuition what kind of deformations we are actually considering here. So this is zoomed out, again, our Calabi-Yau together with this divisor, which is this real four-dimensional subspace. And what we are interested in are now certain deformations of this divisor. However, we want to stay within the class of complex subspaces, so we only allow for deformations which preserve the fact that this is a complex subspace. So in practice, what we do is if we go to a particular point here on this divisor, then we can split the tangent space into a tangent component to the divisor and into a normal component. And a deformation of this divisor will now be captured by a section of the normal bundle, by a holomorphic section of the normal bundle. And due to the fact in the Calabi-Yau that we have this unique holomorphic 3-0 form, we can actually contract that with a holomorphic 3-0 form and get a somewhat nicer object, which is a two-form on this a two-form on this divisor D. And it's actually, since due to the structure, it's a priori a 2-0 form. So now I said that we are also interested in complex structure deformations. So if you take these complex structure deformations into account, then also the definition of what is a global holomorphic section will vary as we define our complex structure, which can also be seen here. I mean, changing the complex structure means changing what we mean by a holomorphic differential. So you can already see from this construction here that the deformation problem of the complex structures or of the bulk theory, together with the deformations of these divisor, it's a coupled problem and it cannot be treated separately. And a little bit more formally, this can be achieved by this what is called a variation of mixed Hodge structure. So in the mirror symmetry description just of the bulk geometry, the variation of Hodge structure is basically this line here, and it's a quite common concept. So the idea is we start with a holomorphic 3-0 form, which in our complex structure moduli space specifies a particular point by choosing this holomorphic 3-0 form. And now if you want to discuss deformations within the complex structure moduli space, so infinitesimally, we can achieve that by adding to this holomorphic 3-0 form a 2,1 piece, so a 2,1 form. This 2,1 form has now two holomorphic differentials plus one anti-holomorphic differential. And so this is just a first-order deformation, and a second-order deformation will add a 1,2 piece. And finally, a third-order deformation will add a 0,3 piece. Now, a fourth-order deformation, since this is a problem in cohomology, up to exact contributions can then again be expressed in terms of all the other three-form cohomology pieces we have. And by doing this procedure, we can actually derive differential equations governing the complex structure, or ultimately governing the geometry of these moduli spaces. Now, in the presence of our brains, like I said, we also need to take into account these deformations of the divisors. And deformations of the divisors are infinitesimally, as I tried to explain, the addition of these 2,0 forms. But again, as I mentioned, we have this coupled problem. So in other words, if we do a complex structure deformation simultaneously with a divisor or a brain deformation, then also we have to modify in second order what we mean by a 2,0 form. And this will add infinitesimally then in second order 1,1 form and so on. So we have now this enhanced diagram, and by also going through the same logic as I tried to explain here for the bulk geometry, we can actually derive Picard-Fuchs equations now for this combined system. Now, now this variation of mixed Hodge structure mathematically, this fits actually very nicely in a framework, because it's really the variation of so-called relative cohomologic three forms. So what are relative forms? Well, relative forms are forms relative with respect to this divisor. These are certain forms, or in this case, three forms of the Calabi-Yau manifold, which have the property, if you restrict them to this divisor, that they vanish. And it turns out, if you study now the cohomology of these relative three forms for the particular divisors we are discussing, that they precisely split into the three-form cohomology of the bulk theory, which was this lower line here, and which we are familiar with mirror symmetry just in the bulk, together with these pieces here, which is certain two-form cohomology which describes deformations. Now, how do we actually realize now these geometries in practice? And since quite a few people here are interested also in these gauge linear sigma model constructions, so let me briefly tell you how this is done in the context of the gauge linear sigma model. So we start with some A-model geometry, which is a certain, so this will also our guiding example now in the following, which is a certain degree 12 hypersurface in a weighted projective space. So to realize this in the gauge linear sigma model, we have two U1 factors, and with respect to these U1 factors, we can realize them by the following fields. where the axes are now the in the large radius regime become some homogeneous coordinates of this radially projective space. And since we have two U1 factors, this translates to that our geometry has two Kähler moduli. So this can be seen here in the corresponding D-term equation. So these R parameters correspond to the Kähler moduli. And then we have these, in addition, we have these the brains, which we also need to encode. So this is a recipe proposed by Aganachin and Wafa, that we should add yet another charge vector. And the D-term equation of this charge vector then can be interpreted as the deformations of these brains. Now, under mirror symmetry, this is actually mapped to a certain degree 12 hypersurface in the mirror, or in a certain ambient space where we can describe the mirror. So this is obtained by modding out a certain discrete group, which is called the Green-Plessner group. But at the end of the day, we end up with a polynomial, which now depends on two parameters. And these two parameters now correspond to the complex structural deformations, which are mirrored to these Kähler deformations, which we had here. And the information of the brain is now mapped to yet another equation. And this is a divisor equation. And again, we had one deformation parameter here, so it is mapped to a divisor, which also depends on one parameter. So now this is now the starting point where we can derive the differential equations, as I sketched in the previous slide. And so just to make briefly the connection to these Calabi-Yau fourfolds, it turns out that the variational problem of this system is actually dual to a fourfold variational problem of a certain hypersurface of a Calabi-Yau fourfold. And again, by going through the mirror symmetry, we can actually also specify again the charges of a mirror dual Calabi-Yau fourfold, which has now the same charge vectors as the charge vectors we started from, just with the difference that the brain vector becomes an additional U1 in this gauge linear sigma model with two additional entries at these new coordinates, which make it to a Calabi-Yau fourfold. So we have now a dual Calabi-Yau fourfold with three Kähler moduli depending on these three Kähler parameters, which ultimately are mapped to these bulk deformations together with the brain deformation. And actually, this recipe, or this gauge linear sigma model recipe, looks very similar to something which actually also Joe discussed with Eva Silverstein in the context of ADS 4 CFT duality, also using the gauge linear sigma model. And I'd be interested whether this correspondence can be much more precise, or whether we can actually also use our techniques to make calculations in this context.
So I can ask a question.
Sure.
So what is C sub AV in your...
AV?
So what is that parameter C like?
Okay, so I have been glossing over a lot of details here. So this description of these Aganachin Wafa brains, it actually works very nicely in the context of non-compact Calabi-Yaus. And in the context of non-compact Calabi-Yaus, by introducing this charge vector, one can actually construct special Lagrangian submanifolds, or one constructs Lagrangian submanifolds, which are believed to flow under the G flow, if you flow to the CFT, believed to flow to a certain non-compact special Lagrangians. And then for these non-compact special Lagrangians, this parameter basically moves our special Lagrangian. So it's a deformation parameter of the special Lagrangian. So in the context of hypersurfaces, this picture is a little...
So is that like a global, so you've written down charges, right? So is there a global symmetry?
So there's no charge, a priori there's no charge assigned to that, but you assign an additional charge vector which gives rise to you to an additional D-term, well, I've only written down part of the equations, but it gives rise to you to additional equations, and these additional equations then describe a subspace for you, and this is going to be the special Lagrangian. I mean, what you really have to consider is the gauge linear sigma model with boundaries here. Are there any other questions? Okay, but so far this was the description of the moduli spaces where we don't have any obstructions. So now the question is, I mean, ultimately we wanted to compute superpotentials, so we need to actually also introduce some obstructions to do that. And the way we can do that is something which is also known from dimensional reduction of these seven brains with Orienti folds. We can do that by introducing certain lower dimensional brain charges on top of these these T7 brains. And then what one notices is that one gets a superpotential in the dimensional reduction of that sort, where integrated over the divisor, a certain flux quanta wedged with a two-form, which is precisely this two-form which I discussed previously about, namely the contraction of certain normal sections of this, certain sections of the normal bundle with the threefold. And it's these kind of integrals which are precisely captured in this variation of relative Hodge structure. So physically, where does this abstraction now come from? Or geometrically, where does it come from? So we have this divisor, and at a particular point of a divisor, we may have certain holomorphic objects or certain holomorphic two cycles. But as we start now deforming this divisor, this this holomorphic two cycle might not be holomorphic anymore and just be a general two cycle. And it's these obstructions which we can describe by embedding basically these curves into a divisor. So the strategy is, if you want to describe the deformation of a five brain, put it into a divisor, study the deformation of these divisors, and identify the corresponding solution to the differential equations, which then corresponds to this particular integral. And it's this period which we will identify this superpotential. So there's actually a nice unifying theme here. Namely, if you take into account all possible solutions to these systems of differential equations I have talked about, we can study now, what we are really studying is a certain relative period integrals. And these relative period integrals, they just contain the usual bulk period integrals plus additional period integrals coming from these kind of integrals. So in some sense, we are computing superpotentials where we now specify certain quanta. And some of the quanta corresponding to the bulk periods correspond to just flux quanta, whereas other correspond to these five brain quanta. So at first, you might be a little puzzled why we combine these Ramanujan three-form flux quanta with these five brains. But on the other hand, we know that there are geometric transitions from five brain to fluxes. And that's why it's very natural, actually, to combine these two things into these relative periods. Now, in this lift to these fourfold geometries, which I talked about, we would discuss in the fourfold certain fourfold periods. And again, now one can disentangle in the limit where I go to this describing just this particular five brain. One can disentangle now the contributions of these superpotentials, which I discussed here, plus certain corrections which come about because in the Calabi-Yau fourfold, we also can describe 1 over GS corrections, which then correspond to certain D instantons, but also some perturbative looking corrections, which we don't really understand at the present, but they also appear in this fourfold description. So let me now come to this n equals 1 effective superpotentials and to the philosophy how we analyze now these superpotentials which we obtain. So this is now, in some sense, a cartoon of such a superpotential. And at the critical point, as I said, this corresponds to where the divisor actually encodes a holomorphic curve. And what we can now do now is basically two strategies. So one strategy is, or for certain scenarios, we can follow the following strategy. Namely, we integrate out all the massive modes corresponding to these deformations here. And what we study are just domain wall tensions, namely evaluating the superpotential at the critical points, subtracting them, and then get a certain domain wall tension. So these domain wall tensions have been computed by different techniques, or a slightly different approach by Johannes Weicher and also by Johannes and Dave, by directly computing these tensions. And what we find is that with our superpotential techniques, we actually also can reproduce their results. So these domain wall tensions, or these computations by Weicher and Morrison, they were interesting because they are the first instance where we can actually compute, in some sense, Ogier-Wafer invariance in the context of compact Calabi-Yau manifolds. And that's why we are also after these quantities, because by using the mirror symmetry recipe, we can actually make predictions to the corresponding mirror symmetric invariance, namely these Ogier-Wafer disk invariance. So another approach which we can also take, so if we have an almost flat direction, or if you have very light fields, we could integrate out almost all the massive fields of the deformation and just keep the light fields, and then directly study the superpotential. So this is clearly a little bit a more subtle thing to do, because as I pointed out, we only really have a CFT description at these particular points. But yet these differential equations, they still have certain integrability structure, which allow us to in some sense single out a particular fields or a particular permutation for this shape of the superpotential. And by using these particular this integrability structure, these flat coordinates, we also can predict certain Uguri-Wafer invariants, and actually they fulfill also certain consistency conditions. So I talked a little bit about this side the last time I spoke here, so let me now concentrate mainly on this approach here. So this is a little bit a technical slide, which is mainly meant for Dave, actually. So we had here this variation of mixed touch structure, which now splits into this bulk system of the Calabi-Yau threefold geometry, together with this upper part here, which is which described for us the divisor geometry or the subsystem geometry. And due to this particular structure, actually the Picard-Fuchs operator, namely these are the differential operators which annihilate all these periods which we are studying, namely these relative periods over these relative free forms. They have a particular form, namely they split into this bulk Picard-Fuchs operator plus some certain boundary Picard-Fuchs operator, which due to these errors which go upstairs always start with the derivatives. So these are logarithmic derivatives into the U direction. And we can actually use this structure to actually also derive inhomogeneous Picard-Fuchs equations, which were calculated directly in this other approach to compute domain wall tensions by Weilherr and Morrison. So how does this go? So if we identify a particular relative cycle which gives us a superpotential, then taking a derivative, we get a period which is actually a period of this upstairs system here, of the subsystem. And by evaluating in some sense appropriately this boundary piece, I mean we've already taken the theta derivative, as it acts on this period of the subsystem, and by evaluating it at the critical points and in an appropriate way, we actually obtain the inhomogeneous piece which corresponds to these inhomogeneous Picard-Fuchs equations. And mathematically, what we are actually evaluating is a Noether-Lefschetz locus of these subsystem periods here. And then plugging in these Noether-Lefschetz loci, we get this inhomogeneous term. So there helps one observation, which was explained to Dave by me, actually, that if you have just a single open string modulus, then actually the subsystem here has just a single 2,0 form, or it's of arithmetic genus 1, then one can actually map these periods always to periods to a certain algebraic K3 surface. And for algebraic K3 surfaces, one knows quite a lot about the structure of these loci, these Noether-Lefschetz loci. So this allows us to actually very systematically, for at least for the geometries where we kind of understand the K3 surface, to determine these inhomogeneous pieces. Okay, so let me now come to an explicit example. What are the calculations which we actually, in practice, carry out? So let me come back to these B-brains on the mirror geometry of this degree 12 surface. So as pointed out, this will give rise to a certain degree 12 homogeneous polynomial, which will describe for us the Calabi-Yau geometry. And what we would like now to do is we would like to compute these domain wall tensions for certain five brains. So one way to construct five brains is the following. We impose three holomorphic conditions in the ambient space. So this, by dimensional count, this will give us a curve in the ambient space. And if by plugging in these equations, actually in our defining equation of the Calabi-Yau, if this polynomial vanishes, then we also ensure that this particular curve actually lies within the Calabi-Yau. Now for this particular ansatz, what we find is, so this is an ansatz with one parameter. And for this particular ansatz, we find that we only have curves in the Calabi-Yau if this quartic equation here is fulfilled. It's a quartic equation which depends on one of the complex structure moduli. Now, so in other words, what we find is if we choose a parameter alpha in this ansatz such that this equation is fulfilled, we find four solutions, which are four P1s in this case, in this Calabi-Yau manifold. And what we would like now to compute is the domain wall tension, which is nothing else than a certain chain integral from one P1 to the other P1. So in our recipe, the strategy is now to find a divisor which actually embeds these P1s. So if we make the following ansatz, then we have for this divisor a critical point at +1, where clearly this equation is automatically fulfilled if you also impose this divisor equation. So in other words, for UA equals +1, our divisor contains these holomorphic curves. So by our strategy, we now also know that solving for this divisor together, this ambient space equation, our Picard-Fuchs system, we actually get two I call offshore domain wall tensions, which have the property, if you restrict them to the subsystem, that at the subsystem two distinct solutions, which in this case, since we have one modulus, again a K3, actually vanish. And by now taking these offshore tensions, we actually get two domain wall tensions, which correspond to the two inequivalent way of computing domain wall tensions between these two vacua. Now, a priori, by this recipe, we have not determined which domain wall tension actually corresponds to which configuration. But what we can do is we can choose yet a second divisor. And the second divisor is now chosen in such a way that it has actually two critical points. And at one critical point, which is minus alpha 1 squared, it contains these two curves. Whereas at the other critical point, it contains the other two curves. So again, by taking a look at this subsystem, what we find is that we have just one offshore domain wall tension with the property, if you take the derivative, that it becomes critical at two different loci, namely at this alpha 1, well, there's a squared missing at this alpha 1 squared, and at the alpha 2 squared locus. So now we get these two domain wall tensions in a different way by choosing a different divisor. And since this divisor now contains a different set of curves, we actually can explicitly identify which kind of curves correspond to which solutions of alpha with corresponding domain wall tensions. OK, let me just point out one thing. So there's another nice way of actually identifying which curves corresponds to which on-child superpotential. And this can be done in the following way. By computing this inhomogeneous piece of directly of this Picard-Fuchs operator, and what we find is that this inhomogeneous curve is at first a certain hypergeometric function, but it can be re-expressed in terms of these parameter alphas, in terms of a rational function of the complex structure moduli together with these deformation moduli of the brain, and by now looking which rational functions we get on the other side, we can actually explicitly assign to each curve a particular on-shell superpotential, which also gets rid of the ambiguity in identifying the concrete periods. And there's also some mathematical statement why we should expect a rational function of these coefficients, but let me not go into this here. Okay, to make the connection to this work by Johannes Weicher and Dave Morrison again, so what they compute is they compute these tensions by evaluating these three chain integrals, and these integrals are actually well defined in the sense that they don't have a boundary term, because as endpoints they choose these holomorphic curves, so we don't get a boundary term just by considering a holomorphic chain ending on these. By considering a chain integrated over the holomorphic 3-0 form, just by the structure of the differentials, we don't get a boundary term. And they show us that this domain wall tension is nothing else but a certain object which you can define in this context, namely a normal function. Our strategy is a slightly different one. Instead of computing these chains with a particular boundary, we allow for a general two-cycle as a boundary and integrate these relative holomorphic three forms over relative cycles. Now, in this relative formulation, this also takes care of that we don't have any ambiguous boundary terms. And actually, by some work by Moisson, it is shown that these two results actually agree if we evaluate our tensions, which we define in this way, at the critical points, namely if you evaluate it at these points where these two curves become holomorphic. And that's how it fits together, that by extremizing basically these off-shell superpotentials at their critical points and taking the difference, that we get agreement with the results by these other techniques. So now I've talked mainly about these B model results. Let me now try to come briefly about the A model geometry. So in the topological A model, what we are computing is actually superpotentials of this particular type. So as I pointed out, if you have a special Lagrangian which allows for classical deformations in the topological A model, then even so it's classical of flat directions, it may be obstructed by non-perturbative corrections, namely by Rothschild instantons in this case. And the structure of these superpotentials has been computed, or also computed explicitly in non-compact examples previously. But the structure is quite generic, and it has the following type. So these Rothschild instanton corrections, they are weighted by two factors. Namely, they are weighted by the Kähler deformation of the bulk, together with these weighted by these complexified Wilson lines. So the picture which you should have in mind is, so if this is our Calabi-Yau, the green part is our special Lagrangian brain, and now we have certain disks ending on these Lagrangian brains. If the Lagrangian brain has non-trivial one cycles in it. And it's the volume of these disks which gives contributions to our superpotential. And the particular structures of that kind that we have integers up here, and they are weighted by a certain multi-covering factor here, which is, And then these are the contributions. So this is a contribution if this disk wraps basically a non-trivial cycle in the bulk, then it's weighted by the volume of these two cycles in the bulk. But then it's also weighted by the volume basically of the disk here. And by now carrying out this mirror recipe, we can now make predictions for these integers. And already getting these integers is, in some sense, a first check that we actually have done the right thing. And for the particular geometry now I talked about, we get the following structure for these two different domain wall solutions, or for these two different superpotentials. But now, since we don't have a continuous modulus anymore, and in some sense we only have two discrete choices, namely the two discrete choices corresponding to the two different curves, We do not expect a weighting with respect to yet a continuous modulus, but instead what we find is that it's weighted by the volume just of the two cycles we have. But we also find, which is quite general for these kind of constructions, that we find half spheres. So there's a one half appearing here, which geometrically means that basically the disks we are counting there, they're just spheres cut in half by the Lagrangian. And this will, and these particular integers for these two kind of domain wall tensions we have listed here. And it is actually integral for also the higher ones as far as we could check. Now, we have now defined our A model geometry basically by this mirror symmetry recipe. And actually, one of the problems is that it's very hard to explicitly construct these Lagrangian brains in the A model directly. But we can discuss certain limits where we actually have additional information about these Lagrangians. And one of these limits would be an extremal transition. So an extremal transition in the bulk geometry is a well-known procedure. And basically, it takes a Calabi-Yau to its boundary by, for instance, shrinking a two-cycle. And then by further deforming it, we can actually go into a regime of another Calabi-Yau, which allows us to continuously connect these Calabi-Yaus. And for this particular extremal transition, this degree 12 hypersurface goes over to a complete intersection in some other weighted projective space. So in the context of the bulk geometry, this is a procedure which has been well studied. But here in the context of brains, it's not so clear what's actually happening. And what is happening is, in this case, that if we discuss this particular limit, which I've depicted here, then the weighting with respect to this factor becomes 1. So what we would predict, if this transition makes sense at all, is that that actually we encounter disk instantons on the other side, which are just the sums of these numbers, because if you set this to 1, then this factor becomes 1. So we would expect disk instantons, which are the sums of these numbers. So the first good part is that actually these numbers all terminate at a finite stage, so we actually get very finite numbers. And so that's why we get these finite predictions here. So the next part, which is nice, is that first of all, we observe that these numbers, well, I haven't shown you the whole table, but they are actually, due to a certain symmetry, they're the same numbers just permuted in a certain sense, or just reflected in a certain sense. So actually, we get for both the Reinwald tension and this limit the same numbers. And by looking again at the equations, what one observes is that in this particular limit, actually these four curves, which I have shown, that they also start to coincide. So it's not at all surprising that in this extremal transition limit, you actually get the same numbers for both curves, or for both the Reinwald tensions. And moreover, we can also directly do a computation on this complete intersection Calabi-Yau, where we check these numbers independently. And here we again can identify a corresponding B-model geometry or brain geometry, which gives rise to, again, an appropriate inhomogeneous Picard-Fuchs equation, which actually directly yields these numbers as well. But this is actually a non-trivial observation that we can, these extremal transitions also carry out in the presence of these brains, and it would be interesting to actually examine this further. So another limit which we might consider is the limit, a certain decompactification limit. So what we can also do is we can take one of the Kähler modulus sending to infinity. So effectively, this corresponds to sending Q2 to 0. And then as we can see, then this factor doesn't play a role. And the only numbers, so here in this case, all numbers actually will disappear because they are all weighted with one factor of this exponential. Well, in this case, we are just left with these particular numbers, which correspond to the numbers of a single modulus. So this yields a certain non-compact Calabi-Yau manifold. And for non-compact Calabi-Yau manifolds, there are much more technologies now on how to compute actually the disk instantons. In this example, we can directly compute the disk instantons in this decompactification limit. And what we find is by this independent computation, again, that we reduce the numbers here of the first column. And what in this case, what this non-compact geometry is actually mapped to, ultimately, it's mapped to, since we are non-compact, you can always map it to a lower dimensional problem. It's mapped to a certain Abel Jacobi map on an elliptic curve. And these objects are also well studied and well known in the mathematical literature. So one can actually quite easily extract these results. And moreover, in this particular limit, we can even in the A model more or less directly also identify the corresponding A brain. So in this particular limit, we actually can make contact to the special Lagrangian we are after. And when, like I said, in doing this special Lagrangian, the computations precisely yield these numbers. Okay, let me summarize and in some sense come back to my title a little bit. So what we've studied is the web of, in some sense, the web of n equals 1 back here. So in some sense, you can picture this, that we have computed certain superpotentials. And these superpotentials are here. I've drawn the corresponding potentials. These have certain minima, and the minima correspond to BPS brains. So in the B model language, these were holomorphic subspaces, or these holomorphic curves. In the A model language, they correspond to a special Lagrangian or to Lagrangian submanifolds. Now we computed the domain wall tensions, in some sense, the energy barrier from going from here to here. And we've seen that we can do this in different ways by embedding it in different devices. We integrate out always of this a priori infinite dimensional deformation space of these curves. We integrate out different massive fields and keep one set or one subset of light fields. And with respect to this light field, then we can compute with the method I've shown you, we can compute these domain wall tensions. Now, the other thing is that this shape of these potentials actually start to change as we deform the bulk geometry. In the B model, again, these were complex structure deformations. which in some sense changes the shape and also changes a little bit the location of these BPS brains. In the A model, they map to Kahler deformations. And this is reflected in the fact that if we study also the domain wall tensions, they still will depend on the complex structure in the B model, whereas on the A model, they will depend on the Kahler deformations. So although these pictures on the mirror symmetry are mapped to each other and are actually, in some sense, are the same, they are from a microscopic worksheet perspective. They are quite different. Namely, in the B model, this is really just a classical obstruction problem or a classical potential which we compute by classical geometry techniques. Whereas in the A model, and it was given by this particular three-chain integral here over the holomorphic 3-0 form, and in the A model, it had a classical piece, namely over certain two chains ending on these special Lagrangians, or it's a combination of two chains in general and four chains ending on these special Lagrangians. But this is just this. The classical part is not the whole story here, but there are also certain instanton corrections, and it's only after including these instanton corrections that the shapes really become the same, and we can compute these instanton corrections explicitly by actually plugging in the corresponding mirror maps. So the other thing which I pointed out is that these bulk deformations, they look quite innocently in this picture, but we can actually do not just a small bulk deformation in some sense, but also more complicated bulk deformations where we go through extremal transitions. And even then, this picture, which is known from the structure of Kolar-Biot compactification in the n equals 2 context, still seems to make sense, at least in certain special circumstances. Now, before I end, let me just say a little bit about the other regime on one slide, where we compute not these superpotentials for the discrete invariants, but for these continuous invariants. And the simplest model we could look at is basically invariants. Try to compute invariants on the quintic. So in this case, the bulk B model geometry is now specified in the P4 in the projective space. But for the B model, we again need to mod out by a certain discrete group, the Green-Plessner group. And then the geometry is now specified by the usual degree 5 polynomial, which has one complex structure modulus, whereas the divisor geometry is now specified, or one choice of divisor geometry is now specified by a certain degree 4 polynomial. So a priori, you might think that you can write down actually more terms, and it does not just depend on a single deformation parameter, but actually taking into account also this orbifold action here, it turns out that this is actually the most general polynomial which we can write down. Now we again carry out the recipe which I sketched. Namely, we derive the differential equations associated to this Kolar-Biot deep brain system, and we identify certain superpotentials. And now plugging it into this Oguri-Wafa formula, we can again extract these integers. Now, this table looks more or less similar to the table which we had before, but the interpretation is here quite different. Remember that we started here with now one complex structure deformation. Previously, we had two complex structure deformations. And we have one deep brain deformation, but still the table is still two-dimensional. And the fact is that now we have on the dual side, we have one Kahler deformation plus one brain deformation. And now these disks are now weighted not by just the basically by the moduli, the Kahler moduli of the bulk, but they are now also really weighted by the position of the brain. Namely, we have now a continuous modulus, and we can now start sliding these special Lagrangians, and that's why we still get a two-dimensional table here. So one direction is now associated to the open string deformations, whereas the other direction is associated to the closed string deformations. And again, I mean, we have defined here the A model geometry by specifying the B model and taking, in some sense, the mirror conjecture to come to these numbers. And it would be extremely interesting to get actually a handle directly in the A model of these numbers. And that's actually also some work in progress. OK, let me now come to my conclusions. So I've given you a Hodge theoretic way of calculating certain n equals 1 effective couplings. And I've also shown you that by studying the and some of the easiest couplings we can compute are actually holomorphic quantities like the superpotential or gauge kinetic coupling functions. And by studying the superpotential, we can in some sense probe the structure of the vacua or of BPS brain configurations. And by doing that, we can predict certain A-model disk invariants. So I've mainly talked about these on-shell domain wall invariants, which depended in some sense on a discrete open modulus. So we integrated out the massive deformations that were left just by weightings with respect to the Kähler parameter in the bulk. But there's also these other invariants which we can't compute, which really depend still on a continuous open deformation. But I think the biggest missing piece is that we should somehow try to verify these topological A-model invariants. In particular, for this case, I mean, there have been, for some examples, verification in that case by direct A-model computations. But so far, not in this off-shell superpotential case to directly compute them. It also would be interesting to examine in more detail these vacua structure in this picture which I've drawn. And there are still many interesting features expected to emerge. I mentioned one thing briefly. I mean, we expect that under certain transitions, actually D5 brains become three-form fluxes. And it would be extremely interesting to, in this context, also study this web of n equals 1 vacua and see when such a transition actually in the context of a compact Calabi-Yau manifold occurs. And it would be interesting to study more systematically this Picard lattice, which I briefly talked about, or this Lesch-Fitz locus, to actually get a better handle on this vacuum structure. And also, it would be nice to extend it. And there are obvious ways actually to extend it to a stack of brains that we might be able to compute certain non-commutative superpotentials. But this is all work in progress, but nothing I can report today about. OK, thank you very much. Yes?
You're getting very big integers in this calculation.
Yes.
Is there any way, I mean, have mathematicians been able to calculate any of these without using mirror symmetry?
So there are so-called localization techniques where you can actually directly compute also these integers in the A model. And when I'm talking about how to verify in the A model directly these integers, that's also the proposal, which or the way which I tried to do it at the point, that one tries to use these localization techniques where, in some sense, one takes these Calabi-Yau manifolds in a very degenerate, though that's how one can picture them, a very degenerate limit where one can explicitly basically count by, well, so-called localization techniques, these numbers explicitly using, well, with the help of computers, obviously, since, as you mentioned, they are quite big. But there are techniques of doing that in principle. I mean, I think for the closed string case, this works very well. For the open string case, it's not so clear how to do these computations in general. I mean, they have been performed in non-compact settings, but with these discrete open moduli, there also have been some computations, for instance, for the quintic. But in general, but for these more general cases, it has not been done so far. I mean, the problem is that one hardly knows any special Lagrangian submanifolds on Calabi-Yaus. And for these cases, one sometimes knows them because there are certain involutions of the Calabi-Yaus. But in these more general settings, it's more hard to identify what is the correct special Lagrangian.
That is a really naive question, we mentioned the work with Eva.
Yes.
And we were looking for solutions in which we could estimate the size of some space. And how big it was, and we wanted to be small in all dimensions. And yes. I guess, I mean, with holomorphs, if you calculate the volumes of, what, 2 cycles and 3 cycles, is that what you can do?
So by mirror symmetry, you compute the quantum volumes of even dimensional cycles.
And can you also get them from odd dimensional cycles from the mirror picture?
Well, actually, I would like to talk to you about your work with Eva, because by looking at your paper, I noticed that in some sense, the charge vectors which you write down, they look very similar to the kind of charge vectors we write down. And it seems, in some sense, natural that, in some sense, the period computations we do might be actually related to some of the quantities which you're discussing in your paper. So, but I'm a little bit confused. Well, it seems to me that at some parts we're using slightly different language. So I'm a little bit confused how to translate the quantities I'm computing directly to what you're interested in.
Yeah, because we were trying to guess the sizes of these things from the linear sigma model metric, which is not the real metric. But if you really have a way to calculate, I think you kind of need both odd and even dimensional volumes, because you want to know that the manifold is not becoming long and narrow in some way, which you could do if you sort of just control one set of moduli.
I mean, it might be that the regimes you're interested in are precisely those points which I briefly discussed about, where one goes to these extremal transition points where one actually wants. So I think singularities in your paper play a very important role. So it seems that one has to push our periods in some sense to precisely these singular points in order to extract some information you might be interested in.
Yes, thank you.